what's the difference between a boss and a leader? One has a title and one has, well, something else. Today, we sit down with a renowned author, strategist, and coach to discuss what that something else is and the skills and strategies leaders can use to set and achieve higher goals for both themselves and their organizations. Before we dive in, you are listening to the Happiness at Work podcast by Management 3.0, where we are getting serious about happiness. I'm your host, Elisa Tander, happiness enthusiast and Management 3.0 team member. In this podcast, we share insights from industry experts, influencers, and thought leaders about what it takes to be happy, motivated, and productive at work, so that loving your job becomes the norm and not the exception. We will be publishing every fortnight on Friday, so be sure to tune in and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Our guest today is Jeff Gibbard, a strategist, coach, professional speaker, and founder of the Superhero Institute, a certification program for coaches. He also hosts several podcasts, including Shareable and Roke, and his latest book, The Lovable Leader, offers a set of practical skills for leaders hoping to inspire their teams, improve their organizations, and potentially change the, quote, broken culture of work. Thank you so much for joining us, Jeff.
Thank you for having me.
Great. Hey, we'll get into your many, many projects, which we already touched upon just before coming on in just a moment. But we always start with the same question, and that is, what does happiness mean to you?
I think happiness is a combination of two things. I think it's one, freedom to pursue what you're really interested in or what matters to you. So I think freedom and freedom from the constraints of other people's expectations or pressures is a really big component of happiness. And then I would say that the other part of happiness for me is a lack of suffering, I guess. It's sort of like when you're in the absence of the antithesis of happiness, I think that's the other thing. So I think so, especially when we talk about work, so much of work is like, it's become this meme of like hating your job. Like, thank God it's Friday. Oh God, it's Monday. And I think if you're in a position where you are suffering either from not having enough of what you need or from being in a position where you don't feel like you can be fully expressed, there's going to be an absence of happiness.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to move away from that, that meme-like situation.
Yeah.
Hey, so when people look you up online, and even I can see it on the screen right now, one thing they'll see right off the bat is the word superhero. And that's awesome. So where does it come from? When did you start calling yourself superhero? And, you know, what does it mean to you? Why did you kind of start using that?
Yeah. So there's almost on like a marketing practical level, I found throughout my career that you have to stand out to get noticed. And just evidenced by the fact that we're going to talk about my superhero title, it worked. But for the longest time, my title was the world's most handsome social media and content marketing strategist. So I've always been kind of like a flair for the different, right? But for me, superhero has a very deep and impactful meaning in terms of like how I approach my work. And I've been a superhero like fanatic since I was a little kid. I had Superman all over the wall. I was born the year after the first one came out, a year before the second one came out with Christopher Reeve. So I've been about the superhero life my entire life. What superhero means to me is to use the powers that you have to try and make the world safer for others, to use your powers to make the world a better place. And I think all of us have the capacity to do that. I choose to lean into that aspect of myself and to try and look for what are the different skills and abilities that I have and how can I use those skills and abilities to make the world kinder, safer, and more equitable. That's the mission that I'm on. And I always, anytime I'm asked about this, I always have to credit my wife because after the last phase of my career where I was very heavily involved in social media and marketing, I left that industry and I was trying to figure out who I wanted to be. And my wife was the one who actually said, oh, you should do something with superheroes. And I was like, listen, I'm in business. Like, people don't want to talk about superheroes. Yeah. They want to talk about, you know, top line revenue. And they want to talk about like, you know, managing expenses and liability and risk. As superheroes, it's not going to work. I want to actually talk to a lot of speakers and authors that are friends of mine And the thing that kept coming up time and time again was about superpowers and being superhuman and
you
know, being a superhero. And it just, it resonates because it's very authentic to the core of kind of who I am.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, sometimes not taking ourselves too serious actually really helps. We might be talking about very serious subjects, but giving that a bit of a spin, you know, my title officially within the company is conference guru. And like, you know, it doesn't really, it's fun.
Yeah.
Hey, so you talked about, what do these superhero people need? Or what do these, what are these super natural abilities that these kind of leaders and people around us now need in these times of, you know, turmoil and problem? So what kind of challenges do you think are people experiencing? And what kind of tools do they need to kind of overcome them?
Yeah. So the way that I think of it is that everyone has a superpower, at least one. And generally, we have multiple superpowers. Mm. And back to your question about what does happiness mean? I think it's the freedom to pursue the things that you're good at and apply the talents and things that you, that kind of come naturally to you. So a lot of things that I do really, really well, they seem like magic to other people, but to me, they're just very common and very easy things to do. And I think that everybody has something like that. When I was in my MBA, there were people who could do accounting and I was like, what wizardry is this that you were doing? Right? So everyone has superpowers, things that they're naturally gifted at. And I think when you have the ability to recognize that, that's superpowered. And when you have the ability to continually add and grow and level up and add to your potential, you become superhuman. And then when you apply your superhuman abilities to making the world a better place, that is when you get to call yourself a superhero, or at least I would say when other people would call you a superhero. So what we need now, in my opinion, I think what we need more is people who are nurturing their superpower for empathy and kindness. I think the more of that that we see, the more we're going to change so many facets of the world.
Yeah. And we at Management 3.0 very much see that as sort of the skill to have as a leader, as a good leader. And that kind of brings me to my next point, which is you just wrote a book called The Lovable Leader, which I love. And let's start with the title and then let's unpack that, that empathy and things that we just talked about a little bit further. Like, you don't often hear leaders portrayed as lovable, or, you know, those are not kind of synonyms that you would put together or words that you would put together there. But so we'll let you to use that, that adjective.
So there's so many different converging factors that brought that on. The very first of which is that it just came to me, the alliteration and the genesis of the conversation of the book. It was natural to say lovable leader because the way the book came about was I was talking with my wife who was new in a position of managing people. And I just mentioned that what she had going for her being a new manager was that even though she had never been trained in the art of management, she had never been trained in leadership, she was just profoundly lovable as a starting point, just as a person. She's very kind. She's very generous. She's very caring. She's very trustworthy. She makes people feel safe. She never wants anyone to feel alone. So she just has this way about her that makes her very lovable. So when the concept came to me, it just was very natural, a lovable leader. But as I moved forward and really explored and began writing the book and thinking about it, was one, it, you know, I wanted it to be a bit provocative. You're right. People don't think about love at work. But at the same time, doesn't love belong everywhere in our lives? Mm-hmm. Doesn't that make the world a better place wherever it is? And if we really break down what love is, and this was partly inspired by when I looked at it by Brené Brown, she, you know, she asked a question to this audience in her audiobook, The Power of Vulnerability. And she asked, like, you know, how many people here talk about love at work or something like that? And then she said, well, how many people think love is one of the most important things in our lives? How much time do we spend at work? And it's like, you see the intersection of these two things and you wonder, well, why wouldn't we care for the people that are around us? Why wouldn't we want to build trust? Why wouldn't we want to build safety? And really, that's at the end of the day, that's all love really is, not to diminish it, but to like really break it down. What is love in our work environments, but to create environments of safety, trust, and care, respect, and kindness. Yeah. Like, these are the things that create a loving environment. And I think everybody truly, if we're going to spend that much time at work, probably wants to love the people that they work with. You know, like, oh, I love my boss. It's like, wouldn't that be great to say, like, I love the people I work with and my manager is amazing. That's, I think, what we're all looking for. And I think as leaders, when we step into those roles, what are we really looking for? We're looking to do such a good job that people would follow us wherever we would go. We're looking for people to give us the benefit of the doubt. We're looking for people, you know, to just want to do great things together. And that happens in environments of love. So those are kind of all of the coalescing factors and things that I thought about as I came up with the title of The Lovable Leader.
Absolutely. So I kind of hear as well, like, you know, all of those words separately, like, you know, be kind, empathic, have respect. We talk about those a lot in creating psychological safety and, you know, all these other aspects of leaders. But I don't think a lot of people have put them all together to make sure to say, you know, lovable as you know, the umbrella term above it. But it does make sense, and it makes a lot of sense. And God, I wish we all had, you know, our best friends at work and all these cool people. And I know that's maybe a bit of a pipe dream, but some of parts of those would definitely be implementable.
Well, I think so just a point on that is that, you know, I came from a business background, you know, I graduated my MBA in 2008, worked at a consulting firm, did a bunch of different things. I've really been steeped in like the culture and language of business. And I'm not opposed to producing results and to being very like strategic and go, you know, I'm a strategist. So like, of course I'm thinking strategically. I love the idea of setting goals, and there's all of these factors of operating well in business. And when I look at lovable leadership, all I'm saying is we can just change the flavor. We can do the same exact things, but just change the flavor. It's that whole Machiavelli's The Prince, is it better to be feared or loved? I think loved, like hands down. You can't be respected if you're feared. So if you can create environments like that, just changing the flavor of doing the exact same thing that you would be doing otherwise, you're just adjusting the way that you interact with others and the position that you take in conversations.
Yeah, I really like that. Changing the flavor. good concept. Absolutely.
Changing the flavor of it.
So the book has been described as like, you know, a practical handbook, offering frameworks and skills and examples that managers can use to level up their leadership and improve their organizations. So what experiences, you just kind of highlighted a few, but like what experience and knowledge did you draw on writing it, and kind of what was the process? You just said, you know, your wife kind of, you were like, hey, she is a lovable leader. She is, that's what she's got going for her. And then where did you draw all the rest of that information from?
Yeah. So the first thing I'll say is that because I have ADHD and possibly a splash of autism, I have I gravitate towards frameworks and sequences, and I like rules. I like ways of understanding and codifying the world around me. It's just a thing that so when I pick out books, the books I like to read are ones that give me very like kind of clear instructions to things, as well as like clear takeaways and callbacks or wrap ups or cheat sheets at the end. So I want a manual to learn something. So when I set out to write my own book, I wrote a book that I would want. I wrote the manager's handbook that I wish I had when I first started. And what I realized in writing it is that what most new managers lack is not the ability to be good at their job. That's why most managers get into
become managers. Yeah.
Yeah. It's because they're good at their thing. And they're like, great, you manage people now. Totally different skill sets, right? So I wanted to create a book for those folks who have just moved into a new manager's role. And what's the most important thing for them to learn? How to manage people. And that's why it's a handbook, is that I wanted something that was framework rich and very like, you know, usable as a guide. And then I also wanted it to be very much for the new manager to consult and keep coming back to, and about dealing with people. So it does have all of the aspects of leadership that you would expect outside of managing people, things like, you know, goal setting and strategy. And, you know, then we move into things like conflict resolution. I've even got a chapter in there about self-care and looking at yourself and figuring out how to keep yourself balanced as a manager. So I really wanted it to be practical, full of takeaways. And that's kind of how it came together as a book for new managers, because that's who I really felt that's where the biggest impact could be made, right? There's not going to be too many Fortune 100 CEOs that are going to pick up my book, because they already feel like they got what they need. And quite frankly, they're probably not close enough to the people to actually make that much of a difference. Where the real difference is made is that there are hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of Monday morning standups all across this country with managers who have no flippin' idea how to deal with that person who's disengaged. And I feel like if we can create managers who have kindness, respect, and trust as sort of their baseline operating system of how they manage people, we actually can change the entire culture of work from the bottom up, because I just don't see the ability to make a real impact by getting CEOs of Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies to change how they do things. That's not really where the groundswell is going to come from.
Yeah, I can imagine. Let alone, okay, we have that really top high C-suite, but I bet there's a big mid-ground of leaders that have kind of been, like you said, like they were thrown in, they were good at their jobs, like a software developer, and all of a sudden they become like a team leader, and they're managing further and further, and they're just like, hey, actually, I don't know what I was doing, or, you know, I could really brush up the skills. So I bet there's still also a big mid layer of people who want to kind of be better at this leadership and management thing. So would they be welcome? What would you say to those?
Oh, absolutely. And trust me, the Fortune 100 is certainly welcome.
Yeah.
But when I think about who it's written for, the tone, the voice, the examples, all of that stuff, it's really written for people that are new managers. I think all of the lessons, and I say this at the end of the book, the dirty secret of the book is that this book is applicable in any facet of your life where you have relationships, any facet, because the most important concepts in the book are all about how we interact with other people in a way that makes them feel safe, that makes them feel cared for, that makes them feel trusted, and makes them, you know, build a deeper level of trust with you. Care, trust, and safety are the underpinnings of, they're the three pillars of lovable leadership. So yeah, it's open to everyone. And what I would say back to the point of it being very framework rich is that there's going to be people who move into those roles who, quite frankly, aren't very empathetic as humans. They actually don't care to, they just want people to show up and do their freaking job, right? The book is actually really good for those people too, because it's so framework rich. If you just need a recipe for how to deal with conflict management, there's a recipe in the book for you. If you need to deal with, you know, angry customers or disengaged teammates, like, there are recipes in the book for you. So it's sort of like, you don't have to be a great cook if you can follow a few recipes. The same thing is true, I think, of management. Is like, look, that might not be your bag. Like, I love people. It's natural. It's a part of me. I want to embrace and get to know people deeply. I care about them. That's a thing for me. Some people, it's not. But I gave them a shortcut to making sure that they're at least doing the best possible version of that they can for themselves by just following these recipes.
Yeah, that's great. So we're obviously called happiness at work, and happiness has many facets. And all of these things that you mentioned actually kind of feed into that. Because, you know, without trust, without respect, there is no happiness. Yeah. But from your perspective of happiness and kind of trying to look into happiness more overtly, what would be your favorite framework or favorite chapter in a book that pertains to kind of that happiness at work?
So I think the most important framework in the entire book is called sitting on the same side of the table. And the reason why I think it pertains to happiness is because I think one of the fastest routes to destroying happiness at work is to invalidate people. And sitting on the same side of the table is a framework where no matter what the conversation is, you are validating the other person and looking for ways that we can work together, facing the same direction, moving in the same direction together. It's a way of making sure that people don't feel alone or isolated or invalidated. And that's true even if you think that they are wrong in whatever they did, or there's course corrective actions. It is a soft method of having a conversation that is impactful and useful and moves things in the right direction, because it doesn't invalidate people. So in terms of, you know, amplifying the happiness factor, if you invalidate someone at work, the ripple effects of that can be that they then start talking to others, and they start they start griping and moaning about, oh, this person said this to me, and can you believe this, and can you believe that? And then all of a sudden you get that sort of snowball effect of like one person's unsettled or unhappy, and they sort of start poisoning the well. And, you know, I don't want to like call people out in that and say like it's their fault if they're disengaged or if they're griping. Some jobs absolutely suck. So it's not their fault. It's on us as leaders to make sure that people don't feel that way, that they don't feel that they need to complain to their coworkers, that really what you want is an atmosphere where people say, you know what, this is actually a really great place to be. I feel supported. I feel like I can grow here. I appreciate the way that we all talk to each other. So there's so many things in the sitting on the same side of the table framework that I think leads to happiness. And then I'm not going to go through all of them at all, but there's a framework in the book called the 8 commitments of the team. And these are sort of like 8 promises that we make as a team. And I think that teams that honor those 8 promises, they are going to be happier teams, because you're talking about things like ownership, and you're talking about the opportunities for growth, and you're talking about courage and resilience and cooperation. These are things that I think lead to happier work environments than if you don't have those sort of boundaries in place or these agreements in place.
There are a lot of management models and theories out there, and they all sound great. The problem is that there's a lot of theory, which we don't always know how to implement in practical terms. For example, What can you do concretely on a Tuesday afternoon to work better with your colleagues? So people need actionable advice, things they can start doing next week. And that's where Management 3.0 comes in. We have modules, practices, a membership community, and forward conferences, everything to help you in your leadership journey and tangible results. Check it out on the management3.0.com website. I like that you said, you know, some jobs really suck. Yeah, true.
They do.
But you can create an environment around it. I've known people that stayed in roles because they just really loved the way the company was supporting them and their colleagues. And it was just, you know, they said it was like going to the pub every day because you were there just with your friends, but you were working at the same time. And the job wasn't particularly, you know, great or intellectually stimulating or anything like that. But they stayed because they just really didn't want to leave that company. And they might stay longer until something that opens up that might be intellectually stimulating, but they were so loyal. They're so loyal to that company. And that's great.
Yeah. Well, they say people don't leave jobs. They leave managers.
They leave managers.
So part of the way I went about this book was I said, you know, you had asked earlier, like, what are the inspirations? What did I draw? And like, so much of it was personal experiences. But part of it, truthfully, was I thought of every bad boss I ever had and every bad job I ever had. And then I just took all of it, wrote it down. And then I said, what would the 180 of that be?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, that would be awesome. And then that became a big part of the outline of how the book came together was like, well, what are all the things that bad bosses do? Well, let's just not do any of those things.
Yeah. Sometimes it's easier to like, what's the right way forward? And then you can't really say that, but you can say what it's not going to be like. So starting with that, is always good. Hey, yeah. So amongst all the praise I found for the lovable leader, I found a description of the book that referred to the quote, broken work culture or broken culture of work. How do you see that? What is broken? What do we do to fix it?
I think that's actually one of the easier, more straightforward things.
Guesses.
I think we have put the interests of business and profit above people. And absolutely. I think the first thing we have to do is we have to make people our first priority. Because what are we doing all this for? Like, really, what are we doing all of this stuff for? Yeah, there are some critical businesses and essential things that we need in society. But there's a lot of completely, you know, fabricated businesses that don't really add anything of true, meaningful, deep value to the world and to humanity, mm-hmm. right? And we have a lot of those businesses. And in those businesses, we have people who are having a horrible time at work. So the broken culture of work is that we are allowing the interests of business and profit to dictate what's important rather than the interests and the needs of people to come first. So if we want to fix that, we have to create environments where we actually acknowledge what people need. And this is something as simple as providing accommodations based upon someone's individual needs, like being able to allow someone to work from home, let's say, because they have kids or because the commute's too long or whatever. Like, that's just a little thing that we have to figure out a way to put the needs of people first. And I heard it said recently about the pandemic that what the pandemic revealed was that prior to it, people had to try and make their life fit around their work. And now people have to make their work fit around their life, right? Like, we're having this conversation. You see the princess castle in my background. I'm in the corner of my living room. This is now my office. And I got kids coming in and out. And like, there's all sorts of things. That's the standard now. You get on Zoom calls, you see people's living rooms. You see their chandelier in their dining room. And all of a sudden you see that they're just regular people.
Yeah. And they are. All of them.
Yeah. All of us are.
We all kind of like at Management 3.0, people first is really, really our thing. And we've sort of shifted into kind of calling that whole package more like agile leadership. Does that term resonate with you? Because you also have, you know, you've done software and you've done so many different things. So just wanted to get your take on that.
So I love the idea that agile is just short for agility. And I think when you think of it through that lens, not necessarily agile
not the
methodology of like, you know, we deliver workable software, et cetera. Like,
exactly.
When we're not looking at through like agile methodology, yeah, sure. Because I think in order to be good at anything, you have to be flexible. Sure, it's good to be, I don't want to say rigid, but disciplined. But it's also good to have the ability to flex in the face of change. And I think that's ultimately, if you look at agile software, it was really about being able to be flexible to change. You can't be a great leader without being flexible to change, because the world is not in a static state ever. It is always in a state of change. And that includes the people on your team, the external factors of competition, the market, everything. All of these things are going to be aspects of change. So yeah, I think you have to be an agile leader. And when it comes to putting people first, I think there's definitely an intersection there. But I don't necessarily think being an agile leader or a flexible leader, for me, for my taste, I don't know if that calls out enough how important it is to put people first.
People first. Yes, the world, the problems don't come at us at a waterfall structure, right?
Like, they, yeah, not at all.
Definitely complex, more complex than that. So, you know, as a podcast host, I also can't let you go without briefly talking about your own work in the podcasting world. So you, like we said in the introduction, you have a few shows, including the wonderful podcast Shareable. And there you speak actually with entrepreneurs and leaders and innovators from like a wide range of industries. So you learned a lot about leadership as well. And obviously we love leadership and love talking about it and improving it and seeing what the future of that is. So what is the main thing, or what is something that stands out for you that you've learned from them and maybe, you know, even further about yourself through doing this?
Oh, for sure. Let me actually tackle the second part first, because okay. When you first said, what have I learned from it? I will say that the podcasting for me has always been, it's going to sound terrible, but it's been a very selfish endeavor in the sense that I get to talk to people and I get to learn from them and I get to have these incredible conversations and make new friends. And that part of it has been the most rewarding for me. And I think just the fact that I publish it means that the amazing things that I learn from others become public, and then it becomes a benefit to others. So, but the truth is that it starts as a selfish endeavor. When I found out in 2013 that I could just call incredible people and be like, you want to talk online for like an hour? And they would say, yes. I was like, get out of here. I was like, this is a hack. Like, you're telling me I could get these incredible people that I want to learn from, and they'll talk to me for free no, stop it. That's impossible. But it's true. But here's where that led to, is that when I started Shareable in 2017, I think it was 2017, 2016, 2017, I forget. When I started Shareable, I had this idea. I said, well, what if at the end of the show, I just swapped positions and I let my guest become the host and I became the guest? And I still think to this day, I pioneered the concept of mic swap.
That is great. Yeah.
But what it did was it allowed my guest to ask me whatever questions they wanted. And because of that, I've actually learned a tremendous amount about myself by the question that they ask. I became a guest on my own show. I actually shared the show. And so when I look back on all the things I've learned, partly it's to ask things or to talk about things that I never thought to ask or talk about. And I'll give you an example of a very, very like, this was a learning moment. So obviously superheroes and superpowers, it's a thing that people ask me about, right? And a friend of mine, Tony Chapman, came on, had him as a guest, and then we swapped. And he asked me a question, what I thought my superpower was. And I have all of these ideas of what my superpowers are. And I went very literal, right? I was like, well, I'm excellent at pitching and sales. And you know, I think I have a lot of empathy and I'm, you know, a good communicator, blah, 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 right? And he said, well, I've known you for a little while, Jeff. I know a lot about your story. Here's what I think your superpower is. And he dropped on me something I had never thought about. And he said it was resilience and reinvention. And I had never thought about this. So all the things that I have, like I consistently reinvent myself, and I won't go into the stories, but I have a number of different things that I've bounced back from that show the resilience. And I had never thought about that until he brought that up and brought that into my world. And it wouldn't have happened had I not created the mic swap opportunity. And it wouldn't have happened, you know, had I not brought on people that knew me. And then also, you know, I've had people on that I had just met, and they asked me interesting things that get me thinking. So I would say the willingness to let go of the reins and give someone else control has given me the opportunity to learn about myself and explore territory I wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's really cool. You almost have a personal or like a different psychologist every week.
Yeah,
as well.
No, it's awesome. It's I mean,
and it's a free one again.
Yeah, I do get asked some of the same questions over and over, but it's cool because then I get a chance to kind of clarify my responses and work on them. But I do get to talk about all sorts of things from, you know, because I have people, like you mentioned, from all walks of life. So like I could be talking one week about sales, the next week about diversity, equity, inclusion, the week after that about like starting a business, or like I've, you know, all sorts of stuff.
Amazing. Hey, so on the podcast, you end with a swap, but we always end with tangible practices. That's really our thing. We want to have our podcast end with something our listeners can kind of try and start tomorrow. So, you know, give us some tangible practices that you like from the Lovable Leader, things that people can start implementing tomorrow.
Sure. So if we're going to go from the Lovable Leader, I'll give you the big one. So sitting on the same side of the table.
Mm-hmm.
I love this framework so much. And similar to, I do a lot of work in like brand and messaging. And as I'm doing that, I often have sort of like Mad Libs going through my head. So like I use different frameworks like the Red Thread by Tamsin Webster or the Story Brand 7 by Donald Miller or one that I call ABC. Like I have all these different frameworks. So as I'm doing brand work, I kind of just fill in the gaps. So I love frameworks for that reason, because you're like, here's my recipe. Okay, I'm going to go through that. So sitting on the same side of the table is a 6-step recipe for having powerful conversations, for having conversations, whether it's conflict resolution or whether it's, you know, working together on the next big thing. And it goes like this. You start by establishing your goals for the conversation and getting consent. That's the first step. So we'll actually do this together. So Lisa, I'd love to have a conversation with you about the framework that I have called sitting on the same side of the table. And my goal for it is I want at the end of it for you to feel like you really get it and you can implement it and your audience can. Is it okay if we have that conversation right now?
Of course. Yeah.
Awesome. Love to. So now I've engaged you. I've got your consent to have the conversation. I've established what it's going to be about. So the next step in sitting on the same side of the table, and I'm actually going to give you the next 2 steps, it's listening and curiosity. So I would then shut up basically. And I would say, so when I said sitting on the same side of the table, what exactly did that mean to you? Like, what's the first thing that kind of came to your mind?
That everybody is on the same team. And I had all these things as flat hierarchy coming in and respect and those. Yeah, that was where my mind was wobbling off to.
Got it. Have you ever had any experiences where you felt like in at work or whatever, that somebody was really sitting on the same side with you?
Yeah. Yeah. I've had the other side as well, but I've also had people who stood by me and, difficult times at work situations. And that was great. That made me feel really good.
That's outstanding. So what I'm getting from you is that as we're going to go through the next couple steps, you've already experienced it. So as I talk about it, you're probably going to have a good sense of what that felt like, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. So the 4th step is validating. So validating rather than judging, which is I'm saying, whatever your perspective is on this is not wrong. This is a key thing. You cannot make the other person wrong. So we're having a very like lighthearted conversation about this, but imagine mm-hmm. we're having a conflict resolution. I can't say, well, here's why you're wrong about that. Like mm-hmm. you might have said, you know, let's say we're having conflict resolution. Joe was being like a total jerk and, you know, I would have gotten the assignment done if it weren't for Joe and yada, 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 right? I can't say, well, Joe was your manager and he's trying to do this and that and the other. Like, it's not a point for explaining.
Yeah, that's going to stop the conversation.
Yeah, like all of a sudden you're defensive. So instead I would say like, hey, I completely hear that. I want to know more about your interactions with Joe and really what went on there. But I get what you're saying is that you felt in that interaction that you weren't being respected, that you weren't being heard. And I totally get that, right? So you're not offering agreement. You're not offering, an argument. You're mm-hmm. simply saying, I heard what you're saying. So after mm-hmm. you listen, you were curious, the step after that, you have to validate and say, I understand what you're saying, right? So after you've validated, right? So now just a recap so far, we've established our goals and gotten consent. We've listened. We've been curious, right? So we've gathered information. Now we validate your perspective. So all we've really done here is said, here's what I want this conversation to be. And we've gathered information from you of your perspective and validated it. From there, we want to align our goals. So the next step is to align our goals. So, hey, I get what you're saying. And we'll go back to, I know I'm mixing examples here, but conflict resolution helps make it more clear. So,
yeah.
You had an interaction with Joe and it wasn't great. And I know that what you want, as much as what I want, is for us to have a great relationship at work and for everyone to feel heard and respected. So I'm getting from you is that what you want to do is be able to resolve what's going on with Joe and make sure that that sort of interaction doesn't happen again, that you guys get on the same page. And I want for your team to be able to deliver those results in the way that you said that you were going to and everything. So it sounds like we're looking for the same thing. So let's figure out how we can do that. And as you align your goals, you're going to start talking. This is where you kind of start talking through solutions. So what mm-hmm. I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to Joe and this and that. And then I think it'd be good for all 3 of us to get together, blah, 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 blah. So I've set up a couple solutions.
A plan.
Maybe I ask you if you have solutions, right? So I've aligned our goals and we're now in solutions mode. Great. So now let's say we've worked out what that is. The final step is to close the loop. And closing the loop is where you kind of go back and you summarize what we talked about. And then you ask again for consent to move forward in that direction. So, hey, what we talked about is that I'm going to talk to Joe first, then we're going to get all of us together. In the meantime, you're going to work on X, Y, and Z and blah, 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 blah. Does all that still work for you? Did I miss anything? And if you're like, no, that sounds all good. By the end of that, if you put yourself in the shoes of, you know, you who I'm talking to, I've been curious about, I told you what the conversation was going to be about. And I invited you to say, I don't want to have this conversation now. So you're now a willing participant in the conversation. That's a really important part. The consent has to be authentic. Mm-hmm. I can't be like, do you want to have this conversation? You're like, no.
I'm
like,
or well, quickly grabbing someone.
Yeah. Like now is now actually a good time, right? Like it has to be legitimate, right? So now you've actually been a willing participant in this. And I've given you the opportunity to actually tell your side instead of just, you know, telling you what's up. I've been curious enough to actually dig in and make sure as a leader that I understand where you're coming from. And then after you've given it to me, I've actually validated your perspective. Maybe I haven't agreed with it, but I've at least understood it. So then now I can say, I understand your perspective. Here's what I want. Here's what you want. Here's how we can both try and go in the same direction and get what we both want. And then as we devise those solutions and we get to it, then you say, does that work for you? And you say, yeah, you know what? It does. We now both own what's about to happen. Good, bad, yeah. And different. We both are aligned about it. So the reason why this framework works so well is because it respects the other person. It also puts you on the same side of the table. It makes you looking in the same direction, going in the same way. It's not adversarial. And the reason I like that metaphor of saying the same side of the table, when you're sitting across from someone in a job interview, let's say, think about what that feels like. It feels like
there's a hierarchy already.
Right. But think about when you go out to dinner with like your BFF, right? And you're sitting on the same side of a booth, you're sharing fries. How's that feel? I like the metaphor because what you're trying to do is create connection and create closeness and create respect and openness. All of those things, when they happen, when you give people the freedom to not be judged, to share what their perspective is, sometimes they'll find out for themselves, I was kind of being a brat, you know? Mm. So using this framework is extremely effective. My wife and I use it in our marriage. Like there are times where like we legitimately have to sit on the same side of the table for a conversation because I'm having like an ADHD meltdown or, you know, she's not hearing what I've said because one reason or another. So we have to sit down and sit on the same side of the table, get aligned in what we're both trying to accomplish and move through it. So it's a really, really useful framework. It's very tangible. The way I tend to remember it as a framework in my head is GLC-VAC, GLC, like the Mercedes GLC and VAC like vacuum. So that's how I remember it. I know it's kind of silly, but that's how I remember it. So G, goals, L, listening, C, curiosity, V, validate, A, align, C, close the loop. GLC,
close the loop. I love it.
That's how I remember it. And if I'm going into a conversation that I know is going to be tense prior to going into it, I will take 30 seconds to a minute and I'll just deep breath and I'll think about how do I want this conversation to go? How am I going to make sure that I hit and go through all of these different pieces?
These steps,
and how am I going to make sure that on the other end, I walk out with both of us feeling like that was a powerful conversation?
I love it. I'm going to start implementing this in my difficult conversations. And
yeah.
All right. Hey, Jeff. So people listening might want to find your book, The Lovable Leader, or might just want to get in contact with you. Where do they do that? Where do they find you?
Yeah.
Or your book?
So I created a website that is basically just a menu of options for all of my stuff. As you mentioned, I do a lot of things. So a lot of things are under construction because I'm doing a lot of different things. But the easiest way to find me is just jgibbard.com. So that's my first, Jeff, first letter, and then Gibbard, G-I-B-B-A-R-D, so jgibbard.com. And that's actually a menu it'll bring you if you want to see my content, if you want to buy my book, if you want to work with me in any of my different capacities. This has links to every single one of those things. So you can just kind of go through the menu of options and find what you're looking for. Get on my newsletter, which is super dope. It's called Becoming Superhuman. It's all of the ways in which you can move toward becoming superhuman. The book is, please buy the book and review it. It's always important to get up to that 100 review mark on Amazon. And so far I have like a 4.8 rating, which is super awesome. Out of like 45 reviews or something like that. So I'm feeling pretty good about it.
Good. Well, let's get some more listeners, to do the review.
Yeah.
Let's give them some time to read it and review it.
Yeah. Hey, Jeff, do it.
Thank you so much for this, really enlightening conversation. And, you know, I hope you have so many things to do. I don't know how you do it. And you're also creating little humans and
yeah, Yeah, I just created a little human. Well, I didn't do much of the work, but there's a new human in my eyes.
Now there might be a little bit of work too.
Yeah, now there's more work. Yeah.
So good luck with that. And, you know, hopefully we'll see you again at some point in some other capacity, or maybe in the same capacity if you write another book.
Yeah. Be awesome.
Great. You've been listening to the Happiness at Work podcast by Management 3.0, where we are getting serious about happiness. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoy our shows, don't be shy. Write us a review. Share the happiness with your colleagues, family, or friends. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn under Management 3.0.